CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Our story begins in August when the news hit that Justin Trudeau and Sophie Gregoire Trudeau were separating. And there's always this excitement that hits newsrooms when, you know, potentially very big news hits of like, is this the beginning of a big news story or is that the news? Is this coordinated release of information from Trudeau and Sophie the end of it, or are we going to hear something else? You know, you call up people who know about this stuff and people who cover Parliament and you get the gossip because rumors and gossip now could become news stories tomorrow. Or they're just gossip and they're unsubstantiated because there's always a lot of stuff flying around in these moments. And so what I was hearing was, if this is going to go anywhere, what we're going to learn is that the reason for this is that Trudeau is having an affair with Mélanie Joly, one of his own ministers. Now, if that was true, that'd be huge because it's not just an affair. No, that is one of his own ministers. That's a big no-no. That could bring a government down. That could be huge. And very quickly, I got the sense that, like, it's just a rumor. And then a couple of days after the news of the separation hit, I started wondering, has anyone run with this? Which could mean one of two things. It could mean that somebody actually firmed it up. If a news organization actually got some sort of smoking gun. And you're also looking to see if anybody jumped the gun. If anyone's running this story before it's firmed up. And somebody did. There was a video on YouTube titled Trudeau's Alleged Affair with Minister of Affairs.
Luck can make one do even the most crazy things. A few days ago, Justin Trudeau shuffled his cabinet. And now you're seeing a reshuffling of Trudeau's life with a separation out of the blue and an affair allegation the next day. Current Foreign Affairs Minister Mélanie Joly is making waves over the internet, with sources saying her affair with Trudeau is allegedly the reason the couple separated. Welcome to Street Politics Canada.
All right, so we're hearing a lot of the word allegations and allegedly. And what I'm looking at is a pretty slickly produced video, like motion graphics. It says shame, cheater. It's very explosive and sensationalistic. And the logo Street Politics comes up. Somebody has done a certain amount of homework here. They're going through the whole history of allegations and rumors of infidelity from Trudeau. There's archival photographs. There are ads attached to this video. Somebody's monetizing this. Somebody has put a lot of work into this, and I'm wondering, what the hell is this? This does not look like something that somebody just made in their basement, but these days you never know. The other thing I notice is it's doing serious traffic. In fact, on YouTube, when I searched for the terms Trudeau and separation, this was one of the top three or four videos I found. It had almost 500,000 views, and it was trending right up there with the coverage from CTV, from the Today Show in the States. This was one of the most popular videos on YouTube concerning Trudeau and his separation. And I start to wonder, what the hell is Street Politics Canada? When I read the about, it says, welcome to Street Politics Canada, a channel dedicated to bringing you the latest news updates without the ill-conceived and abundant hypocrisy of the left wing and mainstream media. So, very clearly identifying itself as truthy, boasting, right-wing, in-your-face, political YouTube. So what the hell is this? I've never seen these guys before. Street Politics Canada, 65,000 subscribers, 645 videos. Interesting. The YouTube banner image has this graphic of Trudeau and Jagmeet Singh on the left side. They're both depicted ridiculously. Jagmeet Singh, for some reason, is depicted as cross-eyed. Trudeau has this goofy expression. And on the other side is Pierre Poilievre looking stoic and heroic with literal laser beams shooting out of his eyes. Going through their video library, accusing Trudeau of an affair is sort of the least of what they've accused him of. Each of the thumbnails has Trudeau looking really ridiculous, and they're not holding back. One of them has Trudeau with devil horns. There's another one with Trudeau as Hitler, with a swastika armband, okay? They've called him a traitor, weak, embarrassing. Modi humiliates Trudeau. Trudeau is running scared. He's deliberately neutralized the military. He's sold out. He's hit a new low. He's bankrupting us with a carbon tax. He's in favor of world hunger. He's a liar. He's funding a forever war. It just goes on, and this would not really merit comment, except for the fact that, once again, this is one of the biggest Canadian politics YouTube channels. And again, I am wondering, who the hell are these guys? Let me continue. I go to the About page and there's a bunch of links. Okay. Streetpolitics.com. That's a pretty good URL. Their Twitter presence does not seem to be as big a deal as their YouTube presence, but there is in the bio a link to their US edition, Streetpolitics US. Okay. So I'm thinking, what if this is a popular right-wing American information source that is now trying its hand in Canada? Let's have a click here on Street Politics US. No, incorrect. There's only 287 followers. So this is mostly a Canadian thing, Street Politics. All right. Who the hell are these guys? Location just says Canada. No address is given. Nobody's name is listed. The narrator is never seen. He never identifies himself. And there's no contact info. I don't know. Street Politics Canada. Somebody making hundreds of nasty videos all aimed at Justin Trudeau. Are they doing this for money? Are they doing this for a political goal? Who the hell are they? I just don't know. I need help. Hey, boss.
Hey, Jesse.
Editor-in-Chief Karen Pugliese here with me in studio. News editor Jonathan Goldsby.
Good morning.
You're here with copious files.
Indeed.
And did we get to the bottom of it?
We got it right from the source.
We tried to center this around the Ruda aspect, I would say. That was our biggest goal, and I think we did a good job at this. It was like posting a meme every day about Trudeau until he leaves office, whatever. This is the beauty of the internet.
Have you ever been to Canada?
No, actually, I haven't been there.
That's the beauty of the internet. Wait for it. All right, Karen, you want to start?
Yeah, when you first walked in and said you had heard a rumor about Justin Trudeau maybe having an affair with Melanie Joly, I was just like, no, we're not doing this. What is wrong with you? I didn't buy it.
No, and your instinct was right. And we should say our story today is about Street Politics Canada. We have no reason to believe that there's any truth to these rumors about Melanie Joly and Justin Trudeau.
But when you started going through the YouTube site and the Facebook site, I started getting like really interested, because I'm always really interested in who's behind these disinformation sites. And I wanted to know the same thing. Could I find them? What could I find out about them?
You studied disinformation at Harvard's Nieman Lab.
Yes, I did. So the first thing when I started going down these sites, both the Facebook and the YouTube site, they didn't start out as political sites. They started out as posting viral entertainment information, a lot of stuff about like Ellen DeGeneres, like to look like they were trying to build up an audience maybe.
You've already got me thinking politics comes second. This is just another YouTube channel trying to figure out what's going to get the clicks to get the audience.
There was more evidence of that because when I looked at the Facebook site, I found an email address on it. And it was this unique kingsonparade@gmail.com. I later looked up Kings on Parade, and it's like a Christian term for Bible lectures, which turns out has nothing to do with anything.
Well, ding, ding, ding. Everything you're saying is hitting like, oh, I get it. It's actually coming from the Christian right. This is coming from the fundamentalist.
Sounds like it, right? That's what I thought. Okay. But then I Googled Kings on Parade to see, is that email used anywhere else? And it comes up on two sites. And one of them actually is a sort of religious site. It's called Testimony Journal. It's a YouTube channel with 21,000 subscribers, location listed as in Canada. And it only has 25 videos on it. But there was another one called Special Ops Journals, which plays a bunch of videos about, you know, old military stories, really very American.
Operation Red Dawn.
This operation was carried out by the U.S. military in December 2003 with the main goal of apprehending Saddam Hussein, the former president of Iraq.
It doesn't have as many followers, a couple of thousand subscribers, and it tends to get much fewer hits.
Of course, we want to know the who and the why. If we could get a name here, then we could figure out, is this person connected to conservative politics? Are they connected to a specific church? What's their motive here? And when I looked at their homepage, streetpolitics.com, that page looked kind of professional, kind of slick. Here's a new media site, every story slamming Trudeau, and formatted not unlike Rebel News or something like that. And there was a link that said premium content, and I thought, okay, here we go. Here's the motive. They are going to rage bait, and they're going to farm everyone's anger, and they're going to convert it into direct monetary support. And if you can scale that up where you're doing videos that are hitting 100,000, 500,000 people, the money might be significant, and then our mystery would be solved. They're doing this for money. But when I clicked on that link, there was nothing there.
So, okay, you're jumping a bit ahead of me, but here's what I was thinking. When I'm looking at the YouTube sites, I'm thinking, here's somebody who's trying to make viral content and make money. And there actually is a broken donate button on their YouTube channel.
There's got to be something else. There's got to be another monetary source.
They're either people who are trying to make something go viral, and then they're selling that fire hose maybe to somebody who wants to turn it into, like, just needs a channel that's going to go viral for content. Or maybe they were trying to make viral content. But I'm going to get to the webpage, because the webpage was set up to monetize. It was just that nothing worked on it. There was an ability to subscribe to it at one point. You could buy merchandise, but they hadn't merchandised it yet. So I went to see if I could find out who owns that webpage. So that sent me down another bunny hole. So the first thing I did is I opened the source code. Because if they're running Google Ads or Google Analytics, that generates a specific code. And then you can search for other sites that are carrying that code and see if there's other related sites. The problem was they didn't. If they're going to monetize it, they should have had Google Ads on it. So that came up kind of dry.
That's weird. If the point is, let's not monetize it yet. Let's just get the biggest audience we can with the most viral content. And then once we've achieved critical mass, now we can start making money off this. But if they don't have the Google Analytics set up, they won't be able to do that.
That's right. Like, it did look like in the privacy terms as if they were eventually going to add these things. They just weren't there yet. So the next thing was like, okay, how else can I find out who owns the site? And so I thought, well, what if I trace the IP address and see if I can trace it to a server, which I did. And there were only three other sites on the server. I thought, well, these could be related. And so the first one was Practical Solutions BPO. And that's the one that's listed as a phishing site. And it's blocked, and I couldn't even get it on Wayback Machine. The next one was Affinity Equities. And that's down, but I was able to get a snapshot on it on Wayback Machine. And it confirmed that it was owned by Penny Stocks. And Penny Stocks was the third website that showed up. And Penny Stocks is still up. And it's like kind of a really boring site that has a bunch of short stories that just give advice on stocks. It's a really dry read. But now I was able to find a UK phone number. And so I traced the UK phone number, and it's a cell phone number.
Uh-huh.
And then I Googled that number. And I got a link to Geek Lab Holdings, which is a company that claims to own Penny Stocks. So we know that's related. So I started looking at Geek Lab Holdings, and they actually have a LinkedIn site. And so now I was able to get all the employees and the owner. And I know the owner is Mohammed Ashraf, and he lives in Cairo. I believe he's the owner of that cell phone and splits his time in between Cairo and England.
Cairo and England?
And then I got the list of employees, but there was one employee on the list that stood out for me. One, because she was the only employee that was not Egyptian. Two, because she didn't list her phone name. She was listed as only Emily with the last initial T, which is unusual for a LinkedIn site.
Emily T. The point of LinkedIn is to tell the world your name and what you do professionally.
Right.
No one anonymizes themselves on LinkedIn. You want people to know who you are on LinkedIn.
The other thing is just the stuff that she's done. She is American. She's currently the editor at Geek Lab Holdings, but before that, she was a Senate aide at the Washington State Senate. She was an intern at Amazon. She was a campaign manager for the 19th Legislative District Senate campaign, House intern at Washington House of State Representatives. So what is she doing working for a disinformation site in Cairo, Egypt?
Okay, Karen, that's amazing. Let's review. We begin with a question about who's going to be the first to go public with this completely unsubstantiated rumor that Trudeau's having an affair with Melanie Joly. That leads us to this viral video from Street Politics. They have a Street Politics US. The Canadian version is way more popular. There's a network of different attempts. Can't figure out how they're monetizing this. Can't figure out if this is coming from a political point of view, a religious right point of view. Basically, you've hit every scammy internet keyword except for dick pills. We've got penny stocks somehow in the mix here, and they're running a few different flavors of internet-y, cash-grabby seeming websites, one of which is heavily invested in sliming Trudeau every day. Why are they doing this from Egypt? And how, and this may be a big clue here, if this is just some completely offshore thing, how do you get the cultural context to write these things?
Dictators like to keep the populace uninformed and out of touch with the rest of the world. This is clearly the path Trudeau is pushing for, as he drives us closer to a dystopian dictatorship each day. The Liberal government's recently passed online news... Something has always felt unsettling about the Prime Minister and his favorite junior and cabinet member. What horrible thing did narcissistic Trudeau do that prompted this? These pictures may also prove to be of great... Trudeau doubles down on disastrous decisions by tacking $60 billion more to deficits through his latest budget. This uncompromising borrowing and spending... Ever since the Trudeau government came into power, it has been completely joined at the hip with the World Economic Forum. This has gotten to the point where everyone believes, or better still, knows for a fact that Trudeau is a puppet in the hands of his masters, Klaus Schwab, and other key members of the WEF.
There's actually a content creation part of this where somebody has to write video after video going through the news archives in Canada, and we learn that there is one Emily T., who is listed as an editor from one of these connected sites, who has a background in, well, not Canadian politics, but who has a background and cultural fluency in North American politics through her work as a state Senate aide.
Two more things that I just want to point out. After I found out about the Geek Lab connection, you can actually find the Geek Lab logo on Street Politics.
Yeah, they're quite open about it.
I didn't know. Like, when I saw it, I never made the connection that it was actually a company.
If you scroll down to the bottom of the page, it just says, copyright Street Politics by Geek Labs Agency.
All right. I'm glad that's there, because I felt like we were reaching a little bit with the connection, but Geek Labs produces Street Politics. We know that.
So now there's no question, and this is just where I said Goldsby has to take a look at this.
All right, well, we're getting somewhere now. We know that this is not somebody from the alienated west of Canada in their basement who is making it seem like they have a very slick media. No, this is a commercial enterprise based in Cairo, Egypt. And now I'm very curious about Emily T. Jonathan, who is Emily T.?
Emily T. is Emily Torjussen.
Torjussen.
T-O-R-J-U-S-E-N. I've been able to learn a startling amount about her.
Why don't you begin by telling us how you figured out what her actual last name is?
As Karen mentioned, her LinkedIn said she managed a campaign for the state Senate seat in the 19th Legislative District of Washington and then went briefly to work as an aide in the state Senate. So the state senator for that district is a Republican named Jeff Wilson, and I figured, like, how many people named Emily could he possibly have in his orbit?
Might have been a few Emilys, but Emily T. probably narrows
Emily,
it down.
Emily Torjussen, and then confirming that through other information that matched up with photos that this is the same person.
Yeah, she does have a photo on her LinkedIn.
Yes.
Right. So once you've got Torjussen, you search for Emily Torjussen, and photos come up that it's the same person as on Emily T.'s LinkedIn.
And if you Google Emily Torjussen, the first thing that comes up is news stories from the spring of 2022 about a woman, Emily Torjussen, being awarded $8 million by a jury due to her injuries in a 2017 Amtrak crash.
Well, that's weird. If somebody has a multi-million-dollar settlement from Amtrak, why are they living in Cairo and publishing anti-Canadian government spam videos?
Yeah, how did this happen? Where did she come from? Well, thankfully, this lawsuit took place in federal court, so it's pretty easy to get the transcripts of the court case. And from that, I got so many answers about who she is, why she's there, what she does.
So who is she and why is she there?
Yeah, feel free to...
Okay. The answer to why she's in Egypt is a little complicated and ambiguous. She was a student at the University of Washington. Because of a language exchange program, she got interested in learning Arabic, became interested in the Middle East, started studying it a bit, decided that she sort of wanted to go into broadly international relations, like diplomatic or NGO type stuff, particularly in the Middle East. Eventually, since, you know, she spent some time in Egypt at different points just before the pandemic, spent a while there, I think, living with a family, teaching them English, trying to learn Arabic. And the reason she's there now is she ran away. So she is 26 right now.
Oh, that's so young.
And she was 20 at the time of the Amtrak crash, which took place on the morning of December 18th, 2017, when she was heading home from university to visit her family for Christmas. The train going south from Seattle towards Portland went too fast around a curve on a new segment of track and derailed from a bridge running over a highway. Three people were killed, and the majority of the survivors were injured, including Emily, who suffered, among other things, concussion and later PTSD and post-concussive syndrome. But basically, the story, as told at the trial, was that that devastated her ambitions and her plans to learn Arabic, to one day work for the State Department, all that. But she liked Egypt. She liked Cairo. She'd been a couple times before. Explaining her injuries at this trial, one thing she said is, I think I'm much more sensitive and irritable about certain things. And when a problem arises, when someone does something and I kind of have an outburst or I don't know how to handle it, they say something hurtful, my first reaction really is to run away. So I usually cut off contact with people and I leave it like that. And then the lawyer asks her, is that why you're in Egypt? She says, yes. So she moved to Egypt for this, in terms of her permanent move, where she moved back to Cairo. She moved to Cairo in June 2021.
This is such a more personal and thorough answer to the question, how did she end up in Cairo, than I imagined you were going to deliver.
I feel bad for her, though.
That's the thing, is like, if she hadn't gotten this multi-million dollar award for her, it would actually be quite a sad story. And it may still be a sad story, but yeah, no, reading this is like, oh shit, like the case she made in court is of a life quite literally derailed.
Yeah, you can see that on her LinkedIn account, because it's like she's involved in all this politics and she looks like she's this rising star that's going to be working in Washington or something one day. And then she's working for a disinformation site in Egypt. So I think you've just answered, how the hell did that happen?
So this is her own testimony in court. She moved back to Cairo in June 2021, started at Geek Labs as a content writer in July 2021, and then became CEO in September 2021.
Wait, what? Can you say that one more time? She started at Geek Labs when?
In July of 2021 as a content writer.
She's a content writer. This is an entry-level position at a media company.
Yes. By September 2021, so 2 months later, she had become CEO.
Well, there's only 15 people at the company. It's not a big company.
There's only 20 people here. You're not going to be CEO in 2 months, Karen.
So I've printed out excerpts from these transcripts, and this is testimony from March 31st, 2022, which was back when Geek Labs was mostly doing crypto and trading content and only just starting to dip its toe into politics. So this is from the direct examination, which means she's answering questions from her own lawyer. Karen is going to read Emily's part, and I'll read the lawyer's. What is your work now?
Technically speaking, I'm the CEO of a small startup in Egypt, which kind of deals with the publications about business in the United States. All of our work is done in English. I manage 4 people. And I'm not a very good manager at that. I am really just a CEO in title because I'm an American and the work we do is about the US. I'm a native English speaker. So in terms of qualities, I'm kind of the best that they have at this very small organization.
You say you have 4 people who report to you. What do those people do? What are their jobs?
We have 1 writer. We have 1 video editor. We have 1 social media person. We have a YouTube host.
And what is your relationship to their work?
I'm not satisfied with their work. This is a constant issue. I've tried to teach them how to do research, how to improve their English, how to write more formally. This has never really succeeded. I almost always rewrite their work entirely because I want it done the right way. It has to be done the right way, and people are unable to do that. And this has caused a lot of friction in our organization.
Has there been turnover?
A lot of turnover.
Are you responsible for that?
I have fired many people.
Are you concerned about being able to keep your job?
No, because quite frankly, I am the best they have. At a different organization, this would not be the case. But in Egypt, this is.
So that's how she described what she did then.
Sounds mean.
As she discusses though this trial and basically she has...
She sounds like she has standards, Karen. Standards.
I mean, part of what they talk about.
Slam Trudeau videos that these Egyptians just can't meet.
I should say that one of the things they talk about frequently in the trial is that she does, as a result of the concussion and the syndrome from that, has emotional outbursts, can't control her anger. And so this, I think she's speaking about it partly in the context of that.
All right, let's not withhold sympathy. Jonathan, anything else?
Yeah, so something I think is pretty key, and this was actually the very first thing I did when I started looking into street politics candidates. It's the first thing I usually do when I start looking into any YouTube channel is I go to the video tab and I click on sort by oldest.
I see what you mean. If I sort their videos from oldest to newest, the initial videos are some low-performing anti-Biden videos, pro-Putin videos, Putin wants 10 things, the U.S. pushed Ukraine into war, and they're getting like 40 views, 81 views. This is propaganda that nobody cares about. And then their first video that hits above 1,000 is Justin Trudeau, stop the segregation, 1,500 views. And then there's another Biden video, doesn't do quite as well. Then Trudeau's back again, Trudeau again, Trudeau again. This is just like a bot, like an algorithm that's just like throwing spaghetti at the wall. And the first thing that starts to stick is talking shit about Justin Trudeau. And then that just becomes all that they're doing. And the views go up and up. It seems like this is about the clicks, but I can't figure out how they convert the clicks to money.
Quite unusually for something like this, we actually have an opportunity to get a little bit of insight, not into street politics specifically, but into Geek Labs holding overall and what they may be trying to do, thanks to these court transcripts from Emily Torgerson's successful lawsuit against Amtrak. And here's an excerpt from April 1st, 2022, in which she's being cross-examined. So, Emily, I just want to go over your CV, as you called it, and some of your experiences, okay? The first thing is your experience, and it says that you're partly working full-time at Geek Lab Holdings, or Lab Holdings. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's your current provider in Cairo, correct?
Correct.
And you're the chief executive officer, correct?
Correct.
And that was from September. You became the CEO in September of last year, correct?
Correct.
And you said you have about 4 people reporting to you.
Yeah.
Was there a time when it was 6?
We have a lot of turnover, yeah.
And prior to that, you were a content writer, correct?
Correct.
Meaning you would write articles.
I would create content, correct.
And are you familiar with something called The Night Beyond?
This was one of their brands, platforms.
You actually wrote some, as you say, content for The Night Beyond, correct?
Correct.
The material of The Night Beyond was a little more cultural. Would that be fair to say, sort of American culture?
I wrote what I was told to write.
Was one of the things you were told to write an article about 10 movie sequels that ruined the original?
I believe that was one of the requested topics.
And that's July 20th, 2021?
Yeah.
And did you pick those movies?
Yeah, they kind of just said, this is the topic. And to be honest, I've never watched most of these movies. I didn't choose the topic.
And then one of the other articles you wrote for The Night Beyond, the next page, was 8 refreshing foods to beat the heat and keep you hydrated. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you picked a bunch of foods that you thought people might like to eat when it is hot and dry?
I looked online and I found foods and vegetables with the highest concentrations with water.
You discussed things like a fruit pizza and avocado salad, and it is tabbouleh. Tabbouleh, is that how you pronounce it? Tabbouleh salad?
I don't know.
You don't know about the article you wrote?
I wrote it in July. I looked up some recipe online.
I guess I'm getting 2 things from this. One is that Emily obviously is in the habit of writing viral clickbait about topics that she knows nothing about. And the other is that the line of questioning in a trial about an Amtrak injury went into some weird places. Let's think about this. You've got 15 people working for this company. They've been at it for some years now. They're having success at building this YouTube channel, but if that's the business model, to build it up and then sell off the channel or to sell access to the channel, they haven't done that yet. Can you remind me of the name of the owner of Geek Labs?
The owner of Geek Labs, the person in charge of the whole thing, is a guy named Mohammed Ashraf, who, as Karen said, seems to go back and forth between Cairo and London. Mohammed Ashraf, as far as I can tell, is basically a serial entrepreneur. But one of his things, or one of the things he's done, is he had a thing called The Ash Show, the daily financial YouTube / maybe Twitch show in which, like, you know, people stream live themselves playing video games, live streams himself day trading.
Honestly, if this drops a lot, like if this drops like 4 or 5%, I'm scooping up some long-term Tesla. I don't see any reason why Tesla will be down. I know it's a Twitter thing, but like, I don't think it's a valid reason. Ooh, Netflix sliding. Nice. Oh, come to daddy. $2.95. Nice. Nice, nice, nice.
Guys, I am astonished by how much you have learned. And yet we still don't know the answer to the initial question that I asked. How do they make money off of this? Karen?
Yes.
I think it's time for us to actually try to talk to these people. Now, I reached out several times to Emily Torgerson. Jonathan found me an email address for her. No reply. I also tried Ash. He would not talk to me, but he did text me back to ask me, why do you think I own Street Politics? So I asked him, are you saying that you don't? No reply to that. And that was the last that we have heard from him.
So I found some freelance reporters in Cairo, and I sent them to the listed address of Geek Labs Holdings. It's on Street 199. Now, my hope was to get someone from this company on the record. Now, Egypt has become a notoriously dangerous place for journalists to do their work. A lot of things that we do every day over here are illegal over there, photographing places, recording places. I would have loved a marketplace-style run-in-and-get-you interview, but I didn't think it would necessarily be safe for them to do that. So I told them to err on the side of extreme